This interview with Amir Lewis was recorded on March 1st, 2022, during the Baltimore Youth Film Arts Workshop, Inside Stories, Perspectives on Incarceration.
My name is Amir Lewis. Actually, I changed my name. My name is Antoine Lamont Lewis. I changed my name 3 years ago to Amir Hassan Ibn Lewis. And I've been on the street now for approximately 3 years.
And how old are you?
49.
You look good for your age. You look good.
Thank you.
So we're going to have some of our fellows just, you know, just ask you a couple of questions about your life before incarceration, during, and after. And, you know, just relax and, you know, just be your honest, authentic self.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So, Lucas, you want to take it away?
We keep passing it around. Yeah, absolutely. So when were you first incarcerated, Mr. Lewis?
As an adult or as a juvenile?
As a juvenile, sure.
My first incarceration, I was 13 years old.
And it sounds like there was some more following that?
A whole lot more.
Would you just tell us a little bit about that?
At the age of 13, I was a misunderstood adolescent. I was basically put away in a juvenile facility, packed up and basically put away by my parent. Because, as they say, allegedly, I was out of control. I had issues. And I had anger issues and basically couldn't keep my hands to myself due to the issues they said I had.
I see. Any fellows, does that spark a question in your mind, a follow-up to that?
Feel free to ask me any question that you want.
Yes, sir, and we will.
I will feel free to give you straightforward answers. Straightforward answers about my life. I don't have any secrets to hide. My mission is to educate you guys and educate people that is directly impacted and indirectly impacted by the so-called justice system, which I call there is no justice in the system.
From okay, the age well, that of 13, being said. With that being said, as an adolescent, what do you think, like, sparked that? Was it your, I know you said it was a parent, but what started your, I guess, criminal history? Like, what did you do? What happened to you as a child? Like, okay, I got to turn this way instead of going this way. What happened? How was your childhood?
Being misunderstood, right? Not having the proper support. Not having the proper support in the household as far as being mentally, physically, and verbally abused. So I had to find another outlet to deal with my anger. I was an individual that's isolate. If I isolate, I don't communicate with you because I don't trust you. So I kept a defense mechanism up. I had this wall up that I wouldn't let down because of the things that I went through in my past. I trusted no one. I don't care if you did say you were my friend, I still didn't trust you. So what opened the door prior to me being put away in this place, I fought a lot. You have to basically defend yourself. And at that time, I'm a small guy, about 125, big guy. So I basically had to defend myself a lot. But what really led me on to being incarcerated a lot, I'm going to defend myself by any means, rather with my fists or whatever object, I'm not going to let you hurt me. Because of the fear, and the distrust and dishonesty that I had not only with myself, but with people as well. So I had an incident with a counselor of mine. I was putting a sign up on a in the room, actually my brother's picture in the room. And this grown man put his hands on me. So when the grown man put his hands on me, I had a water container where all of us, I don't know if people still do it, but I still do it, where you put change in it. And I took that change jar and defended myself, and it went from a change jar to a baseball bat. So in the system, right, they say that you don't have any rights. So I was basically railroaded to juvenile life just for self-defense. And I was railroaded to juvenile life for self-defense because if you don't know how to advocate for yourself or you don't have the people to advocate for you, the system will wash you up.
Brother Amir, let me interrupt you for a sec. I need one of the fellows right now to come up with a real short to the point question. Quick mental drill here, y'all. Quick exercise. Using the word, from what he just said, using the word misunderstood. I need somebody to grind me out a good question right there from what Brother Lewis just said. Misunderstood. Anybody? Volunteer a question.
See all these young ladies on the camera. Where's the men at?
Right there, probably trying to be gentlemen. I guess giving the ladies a chance.
So,
but they're kind of slow tonight, Tavon.
Okay,
come on,
you
I
said,
know you got something to say. Come on. Go ahead, Amber, but make it quick.
Okay, so you said misunderstood. So you don't feel like anyone understood you? Your brothers? Nobody? No one felt what you were going through?
You're breaking up very bad.
You didn't have any peers, any siblings, nobody?
Have you ever heard of the word?
Sorry, I was saying.
I hate you. Have you ever heard a person be labeled as the black sheep? The black sheep, the so-called black sheep is an individual that nobody wants to deal with, nobody wants to support, and nobody wants to back up, regardless if it's a sibling or the family member, regardless of what. So that's the position that I was in. So I was all by myself.
Okay. I need one of the fellas. Come on, Tavon. I don't think you hear me. Can you hear me, Evan?
Oh. Tavon, can you hear us?
Yeah, I'm trying to formulate a question. I really don't have anything at the moment.
Okay. All right, that's cool. Keep on listening, but make sure you give us one before everything's over with, all right? We got about another 20 minutes, so don't forget we want to talk about before prison, during prison, and after incarceration. So I need some of you quiet ones to jump in. Like, Mark, what you got?
Yes, I do have a question. Because I don't think I heard you say it earlier, but can you tell us why exactly you were incarcerated in the first place, the first time?
What, as a juvenile?
Yes. Well, both.
Okay. So you basically got me skipping, bouncing back and forth.
Well, Amir, you just said a whole lot about juvie and so forth. I think we're covered there. So if you want to, you don't mind, if it's cool, you want to do that second part of the question, what led to this adult incarceration, I'd say. I think that's what Mark is asking.
Okay, what led to the adult incarceration? Well, I chose a lifestyle and I started hustling because I was living in, I grew up, I don't know if y'all familiar with Baltimore City. I grew up in Lexington Projects. And I chose a lifestyle to basically sell narcotics. And my first adult offense was a handgun charge and aggravated assault.
Come on, Mark.
And that was at the age of 19.
Come on, Mark. I see your brain thinking. Come on with a question. Give me a follow-up question with Mr. Lewis just said.
I actually didn't have a follow-up to that. I was trying to think of one right now, but I couldn't think of one at the moment.
Okay. Well, I'll give you an example of how you handle this right here.
Mr. Lewis just said how he wound up selling narcotics. What about a question like, did you have to look over your shoulder all the time? What was it like being so risky? Were you ever shot at? Just all those kind of things come to mind. So somebody formulate a good question for me from what I just said right there.
Did you ever have to look over your shoulder when you were selling narcotics? Were you scared? You were at a lesson. Like, tell me, I'm from Baltimore City, so tell me how you felt as a 19-year-old selling those drugs.
I always looked over my shoulder. Because coming in the door, I trusted no one. And I finally gained trust with my family. With my family, right? Talking about family from the streets. So we set up and formed an organization, a brotherhood. And it was called YTB. YTB, the Yellow Top Boys. 221 Fremont Avenue. So I trusted them. You know, we did everything together. When I say everything, we did everything together. And to answer the other question, yes, I've been shot twice. The first time I was shot, it was territorial beef. I was hitting my leg once. By the grace of God, I'm still living because I got hit in my main artery.
Oh, Jesus.
The second time I got shot in my back, 3 centimeters away from my spine. So I'm really grateful to be walking.
Thank God for that.
It's just a lifestyle that I don't recommend anybody to get into. Because it take you places that you wouldn't even imagine. And you basically be living two lifestyles. You know, you have the home lifestyle and you have the street lifestyle. And sometimes the street lifestyle come and knock on your door. If y'all get what
so
I'm saying.
So that being said, was that a wake up call? Like when you got shot, was that a wake up call for you or no?
No, that wasn't enough.
I have a question.
Okay.
Hold on for a minute.
Hopefully I have an answer.
I'm sorry.
Could you start your answer for us over? I think somebody didn't hear you and they were talking while you were talking. So go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
You want me to go back?
Just to what you were just saying just now answering Amber's question.
I don't recommend anybody. I mean, sometimes the street lifestyle come and knock on your front door. If y'all understand what I'm saying by that. And there was a young man that was great to answer, ask me a question.
I think that was Mark.
No, that's Carell.
Mark, you ready?
No, that was Carell. Okay, Carell. Yeah, I didn't know you were with me. Okay, come on, Carell. Glad to hear your voice.
How you doing? I wanted to ask... because you said 19 and it went out to spoke out to me because I'm 19. So I was asking, like, was anything that happened at the age of 19 that was a wake up call for you?
No.
So what was your wake up call?
My wake up call just came a few years ago, brother, to be honest with you. Most of my life I spent behind the wall. And I'm still basically adjusting to society now. After going back and forth inside of institutions. Rather, it's a building you institutionalize to, or you institutionalize as far as your brain, the way you think. Right? That's where it actually starts at. When you actually surrender and submit and do some eternal soul searching within yourself, that's when the change starts. that's when the change starts. So what I do now is the same energy that I took to break law, the same energy that I took to survive in the street. At the age of 49, soldier, I'm just learning how to be responsible. I'm just learning how to make better decisions. I'm learning how to realize and understand that I don't need the so-called friends that really don't care. Because if an individual cared about you, even at the age of 19 or 15, they would encourage you not to deal with the streets. They would encourage you not to pick up the gun. So my mission is to be a shot of hope. I don't care if it's just an ear to listen to a young man or a young woman not to make the same decisions that I made. I don't care how old you are. So my mission is now to let my voice be heard and be a positive impact to anyone, not to go behind them walls, not to deal with the streets. Because the system now is 2022 and I'm 49 years old. I'll be 50 in a couple of weeks. Somebody who never ever thought that they'll see the light of day and meet again. So I thank God every day and I show my gratitude just by spreading my message to individuals. Man, it's definitely not the way to go.
I hear you. So with that being said, you saying spreading your message.
You breaking up, sister. You breaking up bad.
Religion.
You know what, Amber?
Can you hear me? Did you like find religion while you were in prison? Pardon?
Stay close to your phone, Amber.
I am. I don't have good service. That's why I'm asking.
It seems better when you're like real close to your phone, the signal stays put. So try it one more time. Keep it short for me.
She must be in the city.
Amber, we're going to have to come back to you. We're going to have to come back to you.
I was going to say, if Amber needs me to answer that question, I'm sorry, not answer it, but ask it, she can send me the question and I can just ask it.
She said it in the chat. She said, did he find religion within prison?
Actually, I surrendered more when I was incarcerated. Spirituality is what I found. You know, my religion, right, is one. But spirituality, without spirituality, to me, there is no religion. And I say that because you have to understand what religion is, and you have to understand what spirituality is. You can say you're a religious person, but not a spiritual person.
Okay, obvious question. Somebody, I shouldn't even have to ask.
Can I, is anybody?
Go ahead, Carell. You're the only one speaking up so far. Remember when we asked about keeping it short now. Keep it short.
Okay, so I know a little bit about spirituality, so I would ask, was it a lot of things you had to overcome within yourself in prison to make you realize about spirituality?
This time, yes. The last 20 times, everything was a joke to me.
So it was the last time.
Okay, we're looking at the clock, you all. Remember, we said we're going to take it to 6:45. We might stretch it a little bit, depending on how y'all take it down the stretch right now. So look, we've talked about before, we've talked about after. We're really covered there with Mr. Lewis's great, great answers. So what haven't we talked about?
Middle process.
We talked about before and after. What is it we didn't really talk about?
Yeah, we haven't covered the middle, the in between.
You got it. Prison incarceration itself. So I need somebody to like take us into that, and maybe we'll do 5 to 10 more minutes, but we'll definitely be out by 6:50. So
let me help you out.
I want them to ask the question to you, Amir. I want them to ask the question to you.
okay.
So anybody, Cam, anybody. I'm just looking for volunteers, but I'm just wondering why my guy's not saying that much outside of Corral.
I have a question. I said it first. I have a question.
Y'all gonna flip a coin or what?
No, I can't. Here's a tail. So okay, so what was prison like for you exactly? Like, what? How was your whole experience like
in prison?
Yes, sir.
It was all about survival. It was all about survival. Could you hear me? It was all about survival, right? You have two types of people: a person that takes prison to rehabilitate themselves, and a person that takes prison for what it actually is, prison, right? You go in, you don't know no one, so you're always on the defense, always on the defense, right? So I went in, I got a few certifications, and I'm fortunate out of the whole time I was in prison, I only had two incidents. I seen a lot, seen guys get killed, seen guys get stabbed up, seen guys get jumped on, seen guys get put on fire. And to be honest, it traumatizes you. You know, it definitely traumatizes you, but you have to have a strong mind and have faith that you're going to get out and never put yourself in a compromising position.
Come on, questionnaire. Somebody.
I have a follow-up to that.
Go ahead.
So you said your experience was all about survival. What exactly did you do to survive the experience? Like,
I mind my business and stayed to myself. Out of the time I've been in there, I got into like two incidents.
I have one question as well.
Hold on for a sec. Let our guest finish.
The whole time I've been in there, briefly, I was serving 30 years. Gave some time back, two different locations, gave some time back to one location, came home. I mean, left there, came back to Maryland, and was fortunate enough to get an opportunity back. But I had a 30-year sentence, and from what the judge said, I would never see the streets again.
That said a whole lot. I know somebody can respond to that response. Cam, what do you think of what Mr. Lewis just said? What does that make you think? What do you visualize from what he just said that makes you wonder?
Honestly, it makes me wonder about how your schooling was. I mean, I know we covered a good amount of things in the beginning, so I don't want to take it back too much further, but that just kind of made me wonder how your school experience was. And if, you know, there's that talk about the school to prison pipeline. So I'm just wondering, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
That's their talk. I graduated from high school, 12th grade education. I was a tutor while I was locked up. I have 5 different certifications from behind the wall. And I don't want to move. I don't want to move too fast, but the things that I do now, I'm a total different individual that I was when I was behind the wall. See, we got to get away from the thing that they say, that we can't do, or they always blame the education because a person make messed up choices in life, right? The education don't have anything to do with a person's decision, right? You have people that's in so-called positions that still make messed up choices. But being as though it's like a repetitious thing for individuals like myself, right? The so-called system, so-called school system, and the so-called justice system say that it's because, and especially me being from Baltimore City, the first thing the individuals say, the lack of education is why they do what they do. And that's false information.
Okay, so with what you know now about everything you've been, all your experiences, how did you come out adapting to the life that we live now? Because it's hard for me. So how did you adapt?
This is what I did, right? I refused to go back to prison, right? I'm a move real fast. I lost my mother, right? During a 30-year bit. And I gave her a promise that I would never go back to prison. So I come home, I buried my brother. 2 years later, I buried my only sibling, right? So I don't have nobody but myself, my wife, and my kids. So when I first hit the street, I contacted a very, very good friend of mine. Very good friend of mine. And I got to be careful. But he do a lot of community work. And he's a retired Baltimore City police officer, right? So I reached out to him. But once sitting in that jail cell and you have somebody tell you that you will never see the streets again, the only person that you can rely on is God, because the judge, the case manager, and anybody can tell you whatever. So what I did, I strapped my boots up and I hit that library. I hit the library, I asked questions. I got kids out here that need me. I asked questions. I hope I'm not bouncing back and forth, but I know we don't have a lot of time. So for anybody that been through what I've been through, you got to educate yourself as far as the law. These so-called people in charge, you got to challenge them. So I made it my business. I love Malcolm X, right? And I always had this thing that he said, if you don't want them to know something, put it in a book. I wasn't one of them ones. I found loopholes in my case, right? So I came home, I hooked up with my mentor. I joined the first organization was Positive Impact 410, a grassroots organization ran by, I don't know, y'all probably know him, Dennis Wise, another guy from Baltimore City that spent a lot of time behind the wall. So now what I do, if I'm not moving so fast, Positive Impact is one organization, the first organization I joined. Then I joined Muslims for Humanity. That's the second organization. Now I'm with We Our Us, the movement. That's the third organization. So now the organization that I'm with now is called Out for Justice. Out for Justice is a group of women that our mission is to assist people that was directly impacted or indirectly impacted by the so-called system, criminal system. We deal with the voters' registration. We deal with the legislation laws. We passed a lot of laws, like ban the box. We go in and outside the jails. So my mission is now, I'm an advocate in training. My mission is now to educate anybody with the laws and how to educate themselves with this, how teach them how to educate themselves dealing with the system so they won't end up trapped like me.
Well, Mr. Lewis, it's been really great connecting with you this evening. So thanks so much for joining our class. And I just wanted to ask you a closing out question. So yes. I'm wondering, you know, the judge told you that you would never see the streets again. So if you had to give that judge a message, what would you say to them today?
I would laugh at him and tell him he was wrong. And to be honest, I'm still fighting the same case now to get my time back because I'm still on parole.